All right, well, welcome everyone to the Identity Implementers Working Group for December 16th. This will be the last one of the year. And then we will resume at our normal rotation on, it's about second week in January. So thank you all for coming. We'll go over some of the things that have happened this week and throughout the year in a variety of the SSI working groups. And then we're privileged to have Daniel Hardman from SICPA joining us to give a presentation of the new gossip protocol. So we look forward to that. I've dropped the link to the page you're seeing in the chat. Feel free to sign the attendee list. That helps see who's attending, lets us get in touch with you should the need ever arise. And let's see, I'll go ahead and spell that right. So welcome everyone. This is a, let me go over the antitrust policy. Basically, we are a community of collaborators, and we all have our respective day jobs as well, for which there may be intellectual property and so forth. I do request that you keep anything that's IP protected or you know, worthy of an NDA, that type of thing, out of this call, but please feel free to share and comment on anything in the agenda. So Sean, I don't think I've seen you on the call before.
I took a couple years off. I'm back.
Oh, well, good. It's good to have you back. And you mentioned you're working now for the Linux Foundation.
Yeah, I used to work with Daniel and Sam and Nathan at Evernote years ago. So.
Oh, excellent. So are you Utah-based by chance? Or?
No, I'm in Philadelphia.
Okay, so it's not so early morning for you. Well, thank you so much for joining. It's good to have you here. In this call, we try to go over just kind of a variety of things that happened during the last couple of weeks or so in the SSI community. So we're not necessarily limited to Hyperledger projects, but taking a broader approach of things that are relevant to Hyperledger projects and all the efforts we're doing here. So there's usually a variety of things that we like to share. All right, let's go ahead and I'll start walking down the agenda here. The main identity group has been on hiatus for a while. And I talked to Vipin and to see if maybe we could maybe merge our efforts a little bit. And so we're gonna meet and see how we proceed there. The last meeting they had was a presentation from EIDAS, I think is how you pronounce it. And that was back in June. So maybe I can recruit him as a co-chair or something. Now, from the main identity contributors group, or excuse me, the indie contributors group, basically where things are is stuff's getting done. So the indie plenum is done, the indie node is done, automation is done, and sovereign releases are starting. And so that's really, really exciting. That's been kind of a very long time coming. And so it'll be good to have those software repos up and available. Now, did anyone happen to attend that call, have any more commentary than that? I was just reading their preceding page. All righty. In Hyperledger Aries, there was a meeting this week, and there's been a mobile agent summit going on the last several weeks. Sam, would you care to give us a bit of an update on that?
I will. So the last 6 weeks or so, we've had a once-a-week mobile summit. It's a two-hour session dedicated to specific topics. The conversations were excellent there. The link there that I added at the very bottom is the Mobile Summit sort of summary page where there's links to the individual sessions, but also sort of a top level summary of the work identified and who volunteered for what. There's a little bit more work there to make sure we carry that work forward. But overall, I think it was a great success. This was a good time to break. We were we had done this for 6 weeks in a row. And coming into the holiday season, it didn't make sense to break for like 3 or 4 weeks and then pick it up again. So that's considered the end of the 2021 Aries Mobile Summit. And we will, we'll pick something up in the new year, not immediately, but as we have a chance to sort of expand the things that we talked about already. So really good conversations there. All for One are recorded. The other one got recorded, but I wasn't able to get a hold of the recording. So those are posted and available for use. And then we are on break until January 12th. So that's past the first week of January into the second week of January is when we'll resume again.
Excellent. What were some of the favorites of the summit?
We identified a number of things we just didn't have enough community knowledge about, including error handling and reporting, which was good. I really liked the discussions that we had around credential user experience and some of the possibilities that we have in front of us there with the overlay capture architecture and making that happen. We talked a lot about like policy approval of things to sort of help users, which I liked. That was a suggested rename from auto approval of things. We still have some open issues that need science. And so we weren't able to make as much progress as I would have liked to decide anything, but we definitely identified the problem and have volunteers to go look at stuff. An example of that is how to consistently handle deep linking in the two different predominant mobile platforms. They both do it very differently. And so trying to come up with a unified strategy that helps for those is one of the things that that we talked about. And we've got a crew there, including James and Clesio, who have volunteered to take a look and do some science to figure out what works and what they recommend. So that's pretty cool. The other thing that we kicked it off with was that a year ago, sort of, in the middle of pandemicness, we had Stephen Curran had written a transition from the connections protocol to out of band invitations and did exchange. And that kind of got stalled for a year, and we revived that, and that's proceeding well. So we're going to have some attention early in January on that to see where we are, and if we need to adjust timelines. But the goal there is that we continue with the deprecation of the connections protocol, and then have a new thing to move on to, which means that all of our QR codes are going to end up being out of band invitation QR codes, which is fantastic. So that's the. That was one of the first things that we talked about, and is proceeding nicely.
Excellent. Thank you for that update. So the attendees, was there kind of a broad cross section of representation from different companies and so forth?
Sorry, it was. It actually drew a different. In a different crowd than we often have. We had lots of the normals, but it drew in some extra folks as well, just due to the mobile specific nature of it and they're working on. So that was very exciting. We didn't have as much representation from some of the sort of core dominant wallets that I would have liked to have had there. But I felt like we had enough of a quorum that we could talk about stuff and figure it out and then like proceed, and we weren't like log jammed. One of the reasons that I organized it in the first place was because mobile app developers weren't among the super regular attendees of the regular Aries working group calls. And so it was hard to sort of gather the experience together and everything else that like made that happen. So organizing the summit helped quite a bit in that manner. And I think that, that would be a decent mechanism in the future to sort of try and convene a quorum of experience and wisdom around all those areas.
Totally agree. As you were talking, you reminded me of something. It probably should have been an announcement or whatever, but here over Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving, Judith Fleener, who is the PM for Trust over IP, she was in town. And so together with Phil Windley, we put together kind of a SSI meetup for those in the Provo, Utah area. That used to happen quite a bit pre-COVID. And so there's a desire to kind of restart those local meetups in this area, just kind of loose lunchtime meetings. And in the meeting, I kind of wanted to point this out so everybody's aware of it. Timothy Ruff was there, formerly of Evernim. And he mentioned that he had recently, back in September, I think, sold his company Credential Master to Salesforce. And what really struck me was not that these things are happening, we're all doing them, but that a company like as large as like Salesforce is actually bought this company to manage verifiable credentials and presumably will be deploying that in their product. And so I don't know too much about the actual product itself, but Timothy mentioned that they had built it kind of in and on top of Salesforce's platform. And so they were very well integrated, the verifiable credential management software. And what that kind of told me is that everything that we're doing, moving beyond the initial pioneers in this area and supporting companies, is starting to push more into the mainstream. And so I saw that as a really, really good thing. So I think we're going to start hopefully expanding our community here and drawing some additional members to our crowd. So as you mentioned that about drawing a different crowd for the Mobile Summit, this came to mind. So I don't know if all of you knew this, and I'm the last one to find out. But I just I thought I'd mention that about Timothy's company and the Salesforce acquisition.
So, Steve, it's funny you mention it. I had a conversation with a friend at Salesforce on Monday about them. They did a indie POC inside of Salesforce a year ago. He didn't mention Credential Master, but I'm trying to get him to track down the folks who are involved to get them to share their experience. So it's. Maybe you and I are both the last ones to know, but I thought it was super exciting that Salesforce is involved. So that's great.
Oh, totally. Completely. Yeah. If you would like to talk to them and they'd like to give a community presentation, this is usually a pretty good forum since we don't really have a work product like the Aries working group, for example. And I try to always invite someone from the industry to give a presentation on whatever it is they're doing that's SSI related.
Yeah, I'm starting with begging, and I'm going to switch to shaming them after the new year.
That's awesome. Hey, thank you for recruiting them to come present. I think the more we do stuff like that, the more the more that we all see that other people throughout the industry are doing stuff and what they're doing. And our name of the game recently has been interoperability. I think that's really good for expanding our sphere of influence. Thanks a lot for doing that. All righty. Moving on to the Aries Bifold user group. Let's see. Did anyone happen to attend that would like to give an update?
They were mostly paused to allow attendance to the Mobile Summit, which was of similar times. And so I don't know that a lot has happened there recently outside of just their regular ongoing work and participation in Summit.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Reading through their recent proceedings, it looks to me I updated this morning, and the last one I saw was November 9th. So that would tend to coincide with the Mobile Summit. Let's see. Does anybody have any updates on the Cloud Agent Python working group? Anyone attend that? I did not.
I did not. They had a recent release, as Stephen reported on yesterday. in the Ares call and have some ongoing stuff. One of the things that they are introducing is a mechanism within ACAPI for the sort of data migrations within the storage layer. Because the data layer is abstracted, you can't lean on the normal mechanisms for doing so. And so if you need to manipulate something by like adding or changing or something else, so they have a situation where they're developing a migration that you would run between one version and another version that would help to update the underlying data stores to match expectations of the code. So that's not deployed yet, but that's an upcoming addition that's happening soon.
Well, and it's worth mentioning in association with that, there's a lot of really cool things coming up that if someone were willing to provide just a little bit of extra coding support, would happen a lot faster. So there's a lot of really good opportunities right now to get involved with ACAPI.
Well, and they're always, it seems like they're always posting some code for bounty, effort invitation. So especially for small companies, indie developers, there's some really good opportunity there. And those seem to come quite regularly from what I've seen.
Well, and to add to that, if you're not looking for contract work, but you're looking for full-time work, Kiva is hiring a couple of positions for our back-end engineering team, which would include opportunities to contribute directly on all of this fun stuff.
Excellent. Do we have a place within the community somewhere where we can post those notices? Because I know companies and prospective employees really need to be able to get in touch with each other. Sean, you're from the foundation. Where is the best place for people to post those notices?
Today's my first day, and I don't know where the bathrooms are. by the way, I work from home, so that's even more disturbing when I say that out loud. Let me find out. I would say the mailing lists are a good place to start. There is a jobs board, and let me find out what the details are.
So a couple things I can add there. This is one of the great reasons to be a paid member of Hyperledger, that you do have access to post things to that job board. I'm not sure if associate members can post or not. I left that to our HR hiring coordinator to try to track that down. So, but there is a Hyperledger job board that has been a really great resource for folks in the past. I don't know that we've posted it on any of the mailing lists yet. So if you're listening to this recording, this is the first you'll have heard of it.
All right. And, do you have a link? If you could drop me a link to where listeners can find that, I'll make sure it gets in these notes. All righty. So looking over some of the shared components, they seem to be under development. So they're in progress. So there's active development going on there. But I don't see that there were too many numbered releases since the last time, but I have put the links to VDR shared components as well as Ares Askar right there. All right. Did anyone happen to make it to the Framework Go meeting this week? Alrighty. Well, I grabbed some notes of their current activities, put those in the wiki page here. So there are those. There was a framework JavaScript meeting. Anyone happen to make it to that one? I think probably the Mobile Summit trumped some of these meetings, as well as it's nearing the end of the year. But I grabbed some of their notes and put those right there as well. I also draw your attention to I put the source packages there. So if JavaScript framework is of interest, you can grab those right there as well. I've been tracking for a while the Horcrux Ruby SDK. And there doesn't seem to be much active development. The last update that I saw there was July of last year. Does anyone know if that's being updated or if this is more historical, where that might be going? Okay. Let's see, the Aries tools, the toolbox has been under active development. The protocol test suite, the last development that I saw was July of 2019. So that to me seems like it's more historical at this point. And then there's some work on the test harness. I think most on this call don't usually attend URSA. Anyone happen to do that? All right, so I grabbed their notes, kind of just verbatim. So I'm just putting this out here for awareness and for what it's worth. There's a question they're having about interest in developing on URSA. I know a lot of our projects rely on that. And so I just wanted to point that out. Don't really know what that means. I should probably talk to some of those that are attending.
I confess up that I was there at the call. And a lot, largely what's going on is Mike was doing a lot of the heavy lifting inside of the URSA project. And he's also been working on several other things outside of Hyperledger as well at this point. So he hasn't had very much time to do anything on URSA directly. And I know Cam is interested in helping with some of the code cleanup tasks and just some of the general maintenance. But there's not been a lot of other interest expressed in actually writing code or doing the project maintenance on the build process and stuff on the URSA project. So we are really looking for more involvement, especially out of the Aries and Indie contributors that are using it as a dependency. We could use your eyeballs, your code audits, your pull request approval help, all of those good things to try to make sure that code stays in tip-top shape.
Excellent. That's a hard one to recruit for because crypto is so specialized. But it's an important one. All right. Just a quick summary before we get to the bottom of the hour. I won't go into all of these things here. Trust over IP has done a lot this year. Most recently, they had a presentation from Carla McKenna and Sam Smith about Glyph. It was very interesting. I put the recording and a link to this meeting slides as well as the Glyph slides there. And I'm starting to see Glyph more and more in our industry. I know Sovereign is now requiring stewards to have LEIs that they convey to Sovereign as well. So I'm starting to see a lot of that. The main thing, like I say, I won't go over this for time. I want to give Daniel enough time, but they recently did a Trust Over IP year in review. And so there's this link. I grabbed some notes out of that I thought were interesting. A lot of work on the various governance standards, governance models. I'd like to point out just a couple of things that are relevant, of real interest. Across Africa, there's a youth related, kind of an entrepreneurial related ecosystem called Yoma that's built on this technology. So I put the link there. And then also a really big effort that came together this last fall is the Good Health Pass Interoperability Blueprint. So a lot of the things here are governance frameworks, governance models, papers, and so forth that are really interesting. But those two things are very external facing projects that saw a lot of success this year. Now also, if you're wondering what trust over IP is, there's a white paper there. Let's see. That's kind of a good summary. Yeah, go ahead.
If I can add a thought to that, anyone who's listening to the recording especially, and also those of us on the call, a lot of the success of our community is made or broken by network effect, meaning the presence of other folks out there doing similar things, even if they're not perfectly compatible yet, if their intent is to be compatible or their intent is to build interoperability between data, those are things we always want to hear about and talk about in these discussions, because any success of those projects helps all the rest of us land more projects and be more successful in those projects. Because the ability to have an agent that can talk to a lot of other agents is one of the main value propositions of Indy and Aries and the protocols that are being built as a community, and the protocols that, you know, we'll hear from later today. So anytime there's something that we can celebrate in terms of a project deployment or a pilot, or a pilot being rolled live, we love to do that on these calls.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Yeah, this is definitely one of those environments where, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. And so it's really neat to see, you know, the various successes in throughout the community. Let's see. Sam, do you want to give a real quick update on the DIDCOM status before we turn the time over to Daniel?
Yep, we're getting really close. The efforts in January are going to focus on resolving remaining issues or choosing to defer them, and there's several large swaths of things that we've decided to defer. The spec as it is pretty good. It just needs a little bit of polish and resolving the remaining issues before it reaches a candidate status in the diff, which will then sort of put on the 2.0 label officially, and then future work can begin after that, but 2 will remain stable.
Excellent, thank you. Do you have a target time frame for that release approval certification process?
It was originally the end of December. So we're running a little bit behind. That's mostly due to some availability issues on my part. But I'm expecting that like end of January, mid-February is what we're going after. I don't anticipate a lot of pushback from the DIF, either from the steering committee or the technical steering committee, on what we've done. And so it's mostly just us getting it ready and putting a stamp on it.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Yeah, I don't foresee any pushback. In fact, there's a big appetite for DIDCOM to be standardized. So that's excellent.
Ori Steele told me that all he wants for Christmas is DIDCOM V2 to be finalized. So it's going to be late, but hopefully I can help Ori out.
That's awesome. Thank you. All right. I'll kind of skip the other updates in the interest of time, but those are there as far as what's going on at the Sovereign Foundation, the interoperability group, the W3C DID group. I did notice, I don't know if this is being extended, but I did notice today that their stated end date for that effort is the end of this calendar year. So with that in mind, Daniel, we're looking forward to hearing about the GOSSIP protocol. Are you ready to go?
You bet. But I can't share until, there we go, okay.
There we go.
So, let's see. As I look at who's on this call, Sam already knows quite a lot about this topic. Because he was on another presentation I did. Steve, I don't know if you were on the other presentation I did. Have you already heard this topic discussed?
I have not. Sorry about that.
Okay. And Nathan, I don't think you've heard it either. Is that right?
I have not heard it. I have suspicions about what it may or may not be, and I'm eager to hear which direction you're going.
All right. Well, I have a slide deck, and this is the same slide deck I used in the other conversation, but I'm going to approach the topic a little bit. Let me just make sure everybody sees this URL, and you can pull up the slide deck and look at it in more detail if you want later. But I'm gonna take a little bit different tack, because I think when I gave my first presentation, I spent part on early technicalities and didn't get to some of the more interesting technicalities, and maybe I spent too much time framing the problem. So hopefully this will be both a little bit fresh for Sam and still interesting for the rest of you guys. Let me just begin by saying that there have been two problems with the whole theory of DIDCOM and agents that have weighed on me for the past 5 years. The first one is, I knew that NWISE protocols were tricky, and that I was hand-waving a lot when I said that we could do NWISE protocols. I knew that we could. I just knew that as soon as we started doing them, we were going to find a bunch of complexity that would bother us. But all of the problems we've been dealing with for the past 5 years have been mostly focused on use cases that are pairwise, you know, getting a credential, for example, or presenting proof. And I've been saying regularly things like, well, if there was an internet auction or whatever, and bringing up other use cases, but they've always kind of been background topics. So that was the first one that bothered me, that I felt this need, this nagging need to do something about. And the other one was the issue of multi-device support. How does Alice deal with the fact that really Alice is five different devices, her phone, her laptop, her tablet, her web, cloud-based agent, whatever. We tend to so quickly make the simplification that Bob talks to Alice and to kind of hand wave past the complexity of Alice being a multi-party party. And that too, I knew was going to cause a bunch of complexity to surface that we had been ignoring for a long time. So when I went to SICPA and we started working on digital cash, we decided that the way we were going to exchange value was using a DIDCOM protocol. So when Alice wants to give Bob money, she runs a DIDCOM protocol to do it. But we decided we were going to use triple signed receipt technology. Triple signed receipts means there's a third party in the protocol. Alice and Bob have to have a witness that signs off. Now, there's lots of other problems that could have triggered this, but in this case, I suddenly was staring right at a problem that I knew would have this complexity. So the thing that I want to talk about is this thing that we're calling the GOSIP protocol. And GOSIP is one of those recursive algorithms or acronyms. GOSIP is a gossip-oriented state synchronization protocol. The thing that I want to not spend too much time on is the kind of the higher level details. I want to get into some gnarly stuff, because the people that are on this conversation right now will quickly grasp why the gnarly stuff is more interesting. But what I want to say at a high level is this, I believe, is a nice generic solution to both of those problems that I described. It generically solves the problem of Alice having lots of different devices, and it generically solves the problem of Alice and Bob being joined by Carol and Fred and everybody else in a complicated protocol. And when I say that it generically solves it, what I mean is you can design a protocol. I'm talking about other DIDCOM protocols now, the DIDCOM protocol to play chess, or the DIDCOM protocol for some complicated multiplayer game, or for auctioning, or for exchanging money, or whatever else. You can design these protocols, and you can hand wave past the complexity, but underneath there's a satisfying answer, and it's not actually a hard answer to implement. So that's the claim I want to make. And the other thing I want to say is that one of the the trickinesses you can ignore that I'm particularly happy about is the trickiness of connectivity assumptions. In my digital cache problem I was working on, I wanted to start out thinking that Alice and Bob could talk to each other directly. And then when I introduced the witness, that they could all talk to the witness. This is the fully connected model up here in the top left corner. But very quickly, I realized that if Alice and Bob are transacting with smart cards, then smart cards don't have any power, and therefore a smart card can't talk directly to another smart card. And if I can't hand wave past that difference, then I have to write a different protocol for the top right quadrant of this diagram than for the top left quadrant. And so I'm just really happy about the way this provides the generic answer. So without going into all the details, I will say that the generic answer is partly to run a protocol and partly to give clues that you are running a protocol when you're doing something else. And that's represented by the two bands here. There's an active mode and a passive mode of gossiping. Active gossiping is when you're deliberately telling somebody that you're trying to gossip. You're deliberately sharing information. Passive mode is when you're doing something else. So let's say you're in the middle of credential exchange, for example, but the party that you're exchanging credentials with might also be a party that you want to gossip with. And so while you're exchanging credentials in the middle of the credential exchange protocol, you just add a header that says, oh, by the way, this is my perspective on our latest state on this topic we're gossiping about. It's just a tiny little header. And if the other party says, yep, I agree, that's what I know about this topic too, then they do nothing. If they look at that header and say, wait a minute, you know something I don't know because I don't recognize that state, then they go into active mode and trigger this thing that I'm calling synchronization. And the gossip protocol itself, this active part, is a one message protocol. It's basically any party sends to any other party a thing that says, here's some events that I know about. And the other party can then compare those events to what they know and decide if they have more that they want to share back, in which case they can send back a synchronization message, or they can just consume the synchronization message and go quiet. So before I go on, let me see if I've lost the audience or if all the things that I said feel like they connect in your heads.
No, this is sounding very intriguing. As a matter of fact, a few of us were discussing this kind of problem and wondering how best to approach it. So keep going. I'm very intrigued.
Okay, good. So the scenario that kind of describes the full functionality is, first of all, the topic is basically part of a pull request that I raised against the didcom.org website / repo. And if anybody's not familiar, didcom.org is the website that the DIDCOM working group started as a way to publish protocols. So the intention is that didcom.org is, for the DIDCOM community, what PyPy is on community, or what, so I raised a pull request against DIDCOM, propose this protocol, the pull request, to get all of the details. When you read it as a pull request, for some reason, the graphics don't show up right, but you can also track the pull request back to my own fork of didcom.org and just go read it in line and you'll see all the graphics and stuff like that. So I'm not going to go into all the details of this mechanism but I'm going to go into some of the details that I think are the most interesting. The first thing to say is this is, in a simple way of looking at it, it's just a slight evolution of the work that Sam already did on the pickup protocol. The idea of the pickup protocol being that one agent, you know, says, hey, do you have any messages for me, to another agent? And the other agent says, yeah, I do. So the gossiping is pretty analogous to that. One agent says to the other with a header, here's what I know about a topic. And the other agent says, oh, you maybe need to have supplement your knowledge with this. It's essentially like the pickup protocol, but it's been genericized a little bit. But the key concept to understand is that there is a topic. So in the exposition of this in the pull request, the use case that I describe is one where three business partners want to talk, and one of them decides that the topic is setting up a lunch, a working lunch. And the protocol that they're running here that's not gossip is like a rich chat protocol, like Slack or Signal provides, okay? So what they're going to do is they're going to use gossip to make sure the information flows underneath the abstraction that provides the foundation for rich chat. Alice wants to say at the rich chat protocol level, send a message to Bob and Carol. And she doesn't want to worry about the fact that Bob and Carol have multiple devices, that they're sometimes connected and sometimes not connected. She just wants to, at the high level, say, I'm sending a message to Bob and Carol. So she does that. Her rich chat protocol takes full advantage of the abstraction that gossip's going to provide. And so this is her first message. I'll be hungry. Let's get lunch. And the way that she conveys this message is she drops out of the rich chat protocol then to the layer underneath, and the layer underneath is going to gossip the fact that a new message has been added to the transcript on topic X, essentially. So this is the message that actually gets sent by Alice in this situation. What the message, this is a synchronization message. So this is the active gossiping message that I was talking about when you're in active mode. She defines a topic. She picks an arbitrary identifier for it. And then she uses DIDCOM attachments to add payloads that represent events related to this topic. Okay. Her first payload is a topic definition payload. It basically says a few things about the topic definition. And that's one of the areas where I want to dive into the details a little bit. So I'll explain a little bit more about that in a minute. But before I get to that, the second event is Alice's actual post. So this event right here, as a DIDCOM attachment, is this post in the rich chat protocol. Okay. Now what's interesting is Alice has to maintain a little bit of knowledge. She has to remember that she has defined a topic with that identifier, and she has to remember the events in that topic. And she does that in the thing that I'm calling a transcript. This is an example of a data structure that could be used to hold a transcript. Basically, what a transcript is an array that holds all the DIDCOM attachments that describe the events. Okay. So,
hey Daniel, just to interrupt. Yeah. Looks like Nathan has a question.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm not handling questions very well. Nathan?
Well, I raised my hand. I actually kind of wanted to cue these questions. You don't have to answer them now, but hopefully you can slip them in line as you describe things. First, You describe it as a gossip protocol with why. Gossip protocols are considered a class of protocols that's well known. Most blockchains include something that is a gossip protocol for distributing state across the blockchain. Is it intentional that you're calling it a gossip protocol? And do you have any thoughts about having any feature parity with other gossip protocols? And then the second question was, a lot of the thought behind Aries was that we could eventually flip or invert the dependency, but with Indy, and Indy could be built out of components that are inside of Aries. In particular, I was really interested in threshold signatures as a way of confirming that a state has been received by everyone. You've mentioned here the idea that you could have more than one to address. I'm curious as to if you have any topic definition file that would let us configure everyone has to have signed it as they see it, so that we could actually effectively come to consensus with a topic as gossip occurs. So those are my two questions. Don't have to answer.
This is good that I anticipated a different kind of discussion, because that's exactly the kind of deeper issue I wanted to get to. Nathan, I love where your mind goes. On the first question, yes, this is, it meets the criteria that a computer scientist would say are the defining characteristics of a gossip protocol. Obviously, it's a specialized gossip protocol. But it is basically a DIDCOM incarnation of what a computer science class would study if they studied what gossip protocols are and how they work. And in that respect, it's quite similar to gossip protocols that are known in the rest of the blockchain space. The second question, I'm going to jump ahead because I think Sam can tolerate this because he already heard some of my exposition, and hopefully it won't be too disruptive for Steve either. But let me talk about how you define a topic and what the characteristics of your definition are. Okay. So when you declare the existence of a gossip topic, you have to identify who are the parties that are going to be gossiping about it. This list does not have to be static. You could change it over time, but there must be some working definition of who the interested parties in the gossip are, because any given agent that's participating needs to know whether it's relevant to propagate the gossip to some other agent. So if Alice and Bob and Carol are gossiping about a lunch meeting, and Alice and Fred are gossiping about something else, when Alice talks to Fred, she doesn't propagate the gossip that's only relevant to the other audience. So you identify participants. You give a friendly name to this. This is largely so that when errors happen or logging happens or whatever, you have something that's human friendly that you can reference. It's not that scientific, but I would say it's roughly akin to a subject header in email, or it could be equivalent to a channel name in Slack or a subtopic name in Slack. You know, when you're in Slack and you start a thing and then you say, let's talk about this in a thread, basically this is like saying, here's the topic name that I want to discuss. And then the third thing, and this is where it gets to your question, Nathan, about consensus, is you have to declare a style for your gossip. And multiple styles of gossip are possible. I'll let you read this blue paragraph, but I'm going to just talk to it while you're reading. In the case of rich chat, which I used as my starting example, you don't actually have to have guarantees of strong ordering, and it doesn't hurt you if some parties in the set of gossiping parties have an incomplete view, because basically anything anybody says is accepted as a valid contribution to the chat. So if you want to call it consensus, then I would say the bar for consensus when you're doing rich chat is really low. If you're running an online, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the dizzying intellect problem, right? I clearly know that you know that I know that you know, right?
Right. So there are cases where gossip just operates on those principles. But there are also cases, let's take an online auction. If you think about a physical auction, it's possible that three bidders in the audience that are standing near each other all hear when a fourth bidder tries to assert a bid, but the auctioneer doesn't notice, right? The auctioneer maybe is looking the wrong direction, or there's enough noise that the auctioneer doesn't hear. And so the fact that three or four parties in the audience know that somebody tried to make a bid is irrelevant. It's whether the auctioneer thinks that somebody made a bid that matters. So you could also have gossip that propagates, but it only matters, so to speak, or it only achieves consensus if the auctioneer thinks it achieves consensus, not if somebody else does. But you could still have propagation. So in such a case, the audience members, maybe one of the people that overhears the bid being helpful says to the auctioneer, hey, did you notice so-and-so said there was a bid over here? So that's a different style of consensus. And then there's a third style, which is a very carefully ordered, robust style that could also be done. And those are not, that's not an exhaustive list. Those are just three that I anticipated. There's probably a dozen other styles that you could come up with as well. If you run the gossip protocol with a style that mimics the consensus rules of a blockchain, then you essentially achieve the same thing that the blockchain consensus is achieving. But you don't have to run it with that style. You can run it with that style. Did that kind of answer your question, Nathan?
Very much so. And I'm really interested to see where that becomes the most useful. I'm especially intrigued by the N-way chat functionality, because that's something that it often takes different encryption and signing to verify properly, or to verify without disclosing who's a party to the group. And so there's a bunch of interesting things there.
Yeah. So we're almost out of time. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was going to say, in the interest of time, there's two pieces of feedback that I wanted to voice. And I owe you some more explicit writing on these things. So I expect that to come here. One is that in my experience, the fact that you can message your gossip state using any other protocol is good in theory. In practice, people are going to want an explicit message to do so. So you can still, I think, allow for it to pass on anything else, but also adding an explicit message to pass that gossip state, I think, is useful. The second thing is that I kind of wish there's a, you know, and there might be a good way to pass a message natively with gossip style augmentation rather than actually passing the message as a gossip payload. And I think that that has some interesting options too. And again, I need to do more reading and writing on that subject, but I think that could be a nice upgrade of what you've talked about here. Maybe a simplification, maybe.
Okay. Well, that's why this is still a pull request, is because, you know, I was soliciting feedback, and I don't view this as being a fully fleshed out idea yet. I think it's 75%. All the pieces sort of connect. I'm pretty confident that it could work, but I'm sure there's ways that we could improve it. Let me just say that one of the reasons why I went with attachments as opposed to a native message is I wanted this to be possible with DidCom V1 and DidCom V2, and potentially with a DidCom V3 without having me having to upgrade the other layer, right? If I'm gossiping payloads, And the payloads are custom. Like any, if it's an auction, what your payload represents is probably some event about a bid. And that event about a bid could be a DIDCOM message, but it doesn't have to be a DIDCOM message. It could be something else. It could be audio of somebody declaring their bid that then gets acted on. Anyway, the point is, it gave me a lot of flexibility. But two other things I want to say really quick. The snap hashes idea, there has to be a consistent way to know whether you have seen the same event as somebody else. So the section of this pull request that talks about snap hashes is how you identify an event in a transcript. And then the other thing is down here at the bottom, there is an appendix to this pull request document, which is kind of analogous to an ARIES RFC, that talks about how you would write a protocol on top of GOSSIP. What do you have to specify? So the first one is you have to identify the style that you want to use. What does your protocol require as the GOSSIP style? Then you start describing the messages that you want to send as payloads. And Sam, maybe you can make this better. But anyway, then the third assumption here is that you stop making a strong assumption about when you say something like Alice gives Bob a message, you understand, your mental model has to change to where maybe Alice gives Bob a message directly, or maybe Alice just emits the message out into the universe and it gets gossiped in such a way that Bob eventually discovers the message. But you no longer always make the kind of fragile assumption that the way that something moves is by direct communication. And then there's some discussion about the security properties that are involved, which is a whole subtopic unto itself that we don't have time for. But anyway, I'd love to have people collaborate on this. I think it's actually the bar. When I step back from this and say, how hard would this be to implement? My answer is not hard at all. This is actually an easy protocol, and it gives us an awful lot for a very simple mechanism. And I really like that property, and it does a really good job of pushing certain problems out of the scope of concern when you're doing protocol design. And I'm liking that consequence a lot. So I'm eager to move forward. And right now, SICPA's plan is to use this as the basis upon or atop which we write the value transfer protocol. So I'll stop talking with that.
That's excellent, Daniel. Thank you so much for giving us an overview. That's exciting. As I mentioned earlier, a few of us were discussing this multi-party communication issue. And so this is, for us at least, is very timely. Thank you so much for taking time out of your vacation schedule, your travel schedule, to join us. I grabbed the link that... for those slides, and I put that in our wiki page so that those listening to this recording later can grab those. And then the link to the GitHub repo page is in those slides for those that are wondering as well. And thank you so much for joining. Thank you all for attending the Identity Implementers call today. This is our last call of the year, and we will pick it up again on a regular schedule in about mid-January. So thank you so much for joining, and hope you all have a happy holidays, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Yep. Good holiday break. Bye.
Thank you.